My guest today is Timmy Chunks. I've known Timmy for a few years now. We met here in a bowling league in Los Angeles, but we both lived in New York City for some time many years ago, and I knew of him. I may have seen him once or twice, barely remember it. Never met him until moving out here, most likely punk rock bowling first, and then in the league, of course, second. Timmy, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do for a career and how it's been affected by the pandemic lockdown.
My name is Timmy Chunks, and I'm a union electrician, and this lockdown has not affected my job at all. My job is still ongoing. However, my health status has affected it, and my doctor told me I need to stay home and not go work around that many people. So I've been home for 2 months now, and saw my doctor last week and asked him when he thought I'd be going back to work. And he said, let's play it safe. And right now we'll say August. So I'm home for at least another 2.5 months.
Now, I know what you're dealing with health-wise, but can you just talk a little bit about how your health and your state of your health is the reason why you're not working for a few months?
Yeah. So essentially, I'm a type 1 diabetic, and I have rheumatoid arthritis. And the arthritis is actually the bigger, larger concern, although really they're both autoimmune diseases. And the medication for my arthritis really suppresses my immune system. So it makes me way more susceptible to get the vids than, you know, someone whose immune system is healthy and strong. So my doctor said, you need to stay home. You shouldn't be working around that many people. You know, your chances of contracting it in a large group are exponentially greater than if you stay home. So therefore, I stay home with my dogs now.
So up until the virus and dealing with living with the virus and your health condition was the most challenging thing that you'd faced up until that point, I would guess.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, before COVID, it was, you know, the diabetes is the biggest challenge as far as, what's the word I'm looking for? The biggest challenge as far as like unforeseen possibilities, because no matter how well you maintain your diabetes, it'll always throw a curveball at you for no reason. Like you could take a giant shot of insulin that for some reason won't affect you for 14 hours till 14 hours later. And it's crazy how it works sometimes.
You were telling me a story and then the recorder cut out. I deleted everything like an idiot and we're starting.
Obviously
again.
The story wasn't that good.
Story is great. So tell me and everyone listening about this. Tell me the story that you were a scary experience that you had.
Oh, right. I was working downtown Los Angeles on a building called the Wilshire Grand. It is the tallest skyscraper in Los Angeles. I parked in front of a 7-Eleven across the street, basically. So every day I would park on 7th Street. Not 7th. Yeah. 7th and Fig. Sorry. I would park right there every day. Always the same spot. Because when you work construction, you go to work really early in the morning. So I remember getting into my car at 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, whatever time it was. I remember getting into my car and I remember pulling out of my parking spot. And then the next thing I remember was coming to, because I don't know how else to explain it, but coming to with a Metro tow truck driver knocking on my passenger window of my car, asking if I was all right. I nodded yes, because I knew that I wasn't physically hurt. Like I knew I wasn't bloodied and nothing was broke. Like I knew that, but I had no idea where I was. I had no idea how I'd gotten there. And a few moments went by before I realized, I was like, okay, my blood sugars are really low. And I reached into my lunch pail and I had Reese's. I always keep Reese's peanut butter cups in my lunch pail. So I ate a few of those. Slowly my blood sugar started coming back up. He asked if I needed a tow. I said, I'll call AAA. And I got out and both of my both tires on my passenger side were flat and the rims were destroyed. I guess I hit the wall on the 110 somewhere near South Pasadena or somewhere near Highland Park. Okay. I was on the 110 and I was somewhere near Highland Park. And the strangest thing about it is that I had no reason to be on the 110. I didn't live in Highland Park or South Pasadena or anything. So I don't know how I got there. I'm really fucking lucky and glad that I didn't involve anybody else in an accident and I didn't hurt anybody. So, yeah, the diabetes can be a fucking challenge sometimes.
I don't think listeners may understand how narrow the 110 is. It's like the Taconic State Parkway.
Oh my God, yeah. It's like the Taconic.
It's very narrow, and I don't like driving it because I always feel that I'm in a small car, but the road feels small to me.
It's a small road, absolutely. The Taconic, it's great because I was thinking about the Taconic earlier today, but nobody's listening is going to know about the Taconic.
Well, they may. The Hutch or any of those parkways in southern New York State, Southern Connecticut, right, that are leading you into New York City. They're all very narrow, and you have to wonder, cars were a lot bigger back then.
Right, but cars also went slower back then.
Oh, that's true.
Like, when the roads were, you know, when the Taconic State Parkway was built, the cars weren't doing 90 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Yeah.
I don't really do that either sometimes, you know, every once in a while.
It's fun going really fast on the Taconic, though. As long as nobody else is on it.
Well, that's true. There are a lot of deer, too, that
you've
got to watch out for. Talk a little bit about your band. You've been in several bands. People may know you from Token Entry, Redemption 87. But what are some of the other bands, including the one you're doing now, that they've been involved with?
Yeah, Token Entry, Redemption 87 were the two bands I was in prior that have released material, we'll say. Currently, I'm in a band called Let Rage. I play rhythm guitar and I sing in this band. And we have a 7-inch out on Not Like You Records. You can hit up Not Like You on Instagram or any of the social medias. And Let Rage actually formed. It's really funny. We actually formed because of bowling. This would have been 4 years ago, I guess. I think it was about 4 years ago, driving to Vegas, and it was myself, Deanna Montoya, and Jed Ross in a car together. And we were driving to Vegas. And somewhere in that 5-hour drive, Deanna mentioned that she used to play bass in a band back in Texas. And I was like, what? You play bass? I was like, let's start a band. Because if I hang out with you long enough, I'm going to want to start a band with you. Doesn't matter. So at the time, Byron Miller, also from the bowling league, plays guitar. And I had told Byron that he was going to be in all of my bands from now on. And I told him that when Byron and I had a short-lived band called Cute Boys Bleed 2, or something like that. I don't really remember if we had a name. So it was myself, Deanna, and Jed was going to sing. Because I didn't want to sing. That's something that should be known. I didn't want to sing in this band. I just wanted to play guitar. Jed was going to sing. So it was myself, Deanna, Byron, and Jed. So we needed a drummer. So I texted Herman from Los Creepers, who was also on the bowling league. So all five members at this time, when this band originated, all five members were on the LA Gutter Punks bowling league. So I texted Herman. Everybody, we were all in Vegas for PRB. I texted Herman and I said, hey, starting a band, need you to play drums. And he responded with two words. That was a typo. He responded with Let Rage. But what he meant to say was Let's Rage. But he said Let Rage. And I was like, that's the best name. So the band started from the bowling. And basically that was it. And we just, you know, I wanted to be in a band with my friends and having a good time, which is really the bottom line. That's what I wanted.
And how is it different from other bands? Are you as active or less active than the other bands were?
everybody's older now, so less active is definitely a good term for it. But the funny thing is, like, when we started the band, I was like, look, I just want to get together with my friends, you know, every week or every other week, jam, play some music, and have some fun. And I said, if we get to play some shows, that's awesome. And that turned into, well, hey, we got to play some shows. Let's play a few more shows. And for a hot minute, we were playing, you know, a couple of shows a month. It seemed like we were playing a lot of shows. And I realized how much I miss it. So then, you know, I want to do more. So if anybody were to call me up, if my friend Andy were to call me up and say, hey, do you think Let Rage, before he can finish the sentence, I'm usually like, yes, we can do it. But then I have to check with the other guys in the band, the other people in the band. Byron Miller left. So now the band is currently myself, Herman, and Ever Hernandez on lead guitar. So like right now, and we have Tim Abramson fills in on bass for right now. I have to ask it. I want to play every opportunity I can. Unfortunately, I have to ask everybody else in the band. You know, whereas if this was 15 years ago or 20 years ago, everybody in the band would be on the same page. Like, yeah, let's play every show we can, every opportunity we can, let's play.
Sure. I mean, everyone's older. They've got responsibilities. They've got
exactly
bills to pay, kids and things and wives and people. And it's a little bit different, a little bit more of a challenge. So when you were younger and playing a lot of shows and touring, I'm just curious as to how you handled your diabetes at that point, because you didn't have rheumatoid arthritis, right? Like it had.
No. When I was in Tokenenshi and Redemption 87, I had no health issues. So when I was playing with those bands, it was never an issue. I stopped actively playing in bands. Well, that's not really true. Mid-90s. So Redemption 87 was in the mid-90s, like 95 and 96, I think, was when I was in the band. In 1994 is when I started working for Green Day. It was actually July 3rd. First show I did with them was at Slim's. Yeah, 1994. So I'd started working for Green Day, and that's actually how I had met everybody in Redemption 87, because I lived in Long Beach, but everybody else in Redemption 87 lived in the East Bay. So the other members of that was my phone. The other members of Redemption 87 all lived in Oakland and Berkeley. So, but I lived in Long Beach, and I remember I was home one from tour. I wasn't on tour, and there was nothing going on in Los Angeles. But NoFX was playing at the Trocadero in San Francisco on a Saturday night or something, or a Friday night. And I said, well, fuck it. I'm going to go to San Francisco. So I just drove up to San Francisco. And it was one of those things I was like, there was no plans. I wasn't like, hey, I'm going to come up and crash at your place or whatever. So I just started driving up. And when I got into Oakland, off the 580 in Oakland, I got over and I called a friend of mine who lived up there. And I said, hey, I'm going to go to the NoFX show tonight at the Trocadero. Are you going? And he was like, no. And I was like, can you tell me where it is? Right? Because this was 94. We didn't have cell phones with maps on.
No GPS.
There was no GPS. Nothing. There was no nothing.
You had to call from a payphone, I guess.
I did. I called from a payphone at a gas station. And he said, okay, yeah. He gave me the address, explained to me how to get there. And he said, you know, call me back if you need to crash here tonight. You know, you're more than welcome. Went to the show. Timmy Turtle was at the door. I don't know if you know who Timmy Turtle is. Sings for the Grim. Used to work for NoFX for a long time. So went into the show. Had a great time hanging out. Had just a ton of fun. Seeing a bunch of people, you know. When I was leaving, Lars Fredrickson asked if I could give him a ride home. And I was like, sure, no problem. And I remember he had a giant mohawk, had the sunroof. I had a Volkswagen Golf. that I had a Volkswagen Golf that I had purchased off of Dave Smalley. But it had a sunroof on it. So we had to crack the sunroof so his Mohawk could stick up out of the sunroof. Anyway, Lars was living over in the worst part of fucking Oakland at a place called Punks with Presses. And he was like, hey, do you need a place to crash? And I was like, yeah, if I can. So I ended up spending the night there. And then the next day we went over to Eric's house. Eric Ozine, the singer for Redemption 87. Used to sing in a band called Unit Pride. Then we did Redemption 87 together. And then he went on to do the Nerve Agents. But that was it. So while I was sitting there at Eric's house, I was just fiddling with a guitar playing, I don't know, like a Youth of Today song or something. And Eric and Ian Miller were both there. Ian played bass in Redemption 87. And they were both there. And they said, hey, we're starting a band. We want you to play guitar. And I kind of laughed at them. And I was just like, look, guys, I'm not a guitar player. I was like, I don't know how to play guitar. I'm flattered that you asked, but, you know, I appreciate it. But, you know, find somebody who knows how to play guitar. So the next day, I think, I said my goodbyes and I drove home. About 3 days later, my phone rings in my apartment. Sorry, I said I was living in Long Beach. I was actually living in South Pasadena at the time. And Dave Smalley was my apartment manager, living in South Pasadena. So my phone rings and it's Eric. And I'm like, oh, hey, how's it going? And he says, listen, me and Ian, we've been talking and we really want you to play guitar. And I said, listen, I'm not sure you understand how bad I am. I don't really know how to play guitar. And they said, no, we really want you to play guitar. So I said, all right, well, I'll come up, you know, I can come back up in a couple of days. So I drove up and we got together at our drummer, Gary Gutfield. I forget, he shared a lockout room with a few other bands. I forget which band he was in that was in there using it. But so he said, oh, let's go to the lockout. So myself, Ian, Eric, and Gary, the original four members of Redemption 87, went to the lockout room and ended up writing three songs that night that made it on the first record. I couldn't tell you which songs they were right now, but it was a lot of fun. It was so much fun. Redemption 87 was so much fucking fun.
It's a great band. It reminded me of East Bay hardcore meets New York hardcore. Like, it was a great combination of both. You know, even though it was 3-1, yeah, I guess, ratio, but still, you know, it was still kind of, it was, at the time, it was very different. And to, right, and to hear what happened then with the Nerve Agents, they were still a very different band. Like, to me, absolutely, I liked them a lot. Short-lived, but they were great.
Yeah, yeah. Too short-lived, unfortunately, but
all the great bands are. Well, many of them are. You know?
Yeah, of
some
course.
Of them are too short-lived. When you're dealing with diabetes and rheumatoid arthritis, I think, how is it to navigate your daily life now with the pandemic? Are you any more cautious than you may have been prior to this because you've been told now that your immune system is compromised?
That's a great question. I can't say that. I hesitate to say that I'm more cautious. I am a little bit more cautious, you know. I hate wearing a mask. But, you know, when I go to the store, I got to wear a mask. I can't stay inside all the time, though. So I make a lot of non-essential trips. You know, 2 weeks ago, a few weeks ago, me and my kids drove 2 hours to Bakersfield to get Sonic, just to get it out of the house. So it's really confusing, actually, because the mixed stories, you know, it's like, who do you believe? You know? Yeah. My heart goes out to anybody who gets this and passes away or knows someone who has it and has passed away, because that's just fucking terrible. But I sit here and I feel healthy and I feel fine. Right? So I want to go to work. I feel healthy and I feel fine. My doctor knows a fuck lot more than I do, though. So I kind of got to trust him when he says you shouldn't go to work. So as far as whether or not I'm more cautious, I'd say a little bit, probably not as much as I should be, but it's so goddamn confusing.
And how have your both of your kids are older, so they're not in that age, I think, where they would question or not really know what's going on. But how have you been handling that, if they've, or have they not even brought it up, or have you discussed it a little bit?
No, they, my kids are 17 and 19. So they're both, I'm going to say that they're both optimistically cautious, I guess is the best way to put it. Like, they don't seem to be as put out by trying to be cautious. But yeah, so they're optimistically cautious. Like, you know, they, granted, this is all new to everybody, right? Nobody knows what's going on. People who are a little bit older, you know, not trying to compare the two, but like the AIDS outbreak, the AIDS pandemic was insane. You know what I mean? So there's a part of me that struggles. All right, this is where everybody's going to call in and tell you to, or write to you and tell you to never have me on again. the 16-year-old in me believes we are headed for a police state, martial law police state. And the 16-year-old in me is excited for it. The 50-something in me is like, oh, geez, I don't know if I have the energy. But, you know, Keith Morris said it best, question authority, right? So you can question authority and not be stupid.
I've spoken to other people, and they have mentioned police state before, so you're not the only one who has that thought. Right. I don't know if they're excited about it, but they've mentioned it. You and I are very similar in age, and when we talk about question authority, you know, we're not indoctrinated, but we certainly heard a lot of music through our whole lifetime that probably saved our lives.
Absolutely.
That definitely, the underlying theme was to question authority and everything, you know, whether it was reading Maxim Rock and Roll, Flipside less, but Maxim Rock and Roll more, and other zines that were underground and had a little bit of a political slant, and, you know, even Crass and Crass Records, and that definitely question authority was something that is certainly near and dear to me. And I've always sort of done it, not necessarily vocally, but I always
It becomes ingrained. It becomes ingrained when you grow up in the scene, quote unquote. That is just, that's part of your coming of age. You know, so questioning authority just becomes a natural. It's hard to say. Like, I can't say what kids in the scene are like today because I don't know them, right? I'm older and I'm a little further removed from it. But I imagine that the kids in the scene today that are 16 are going through the same emotional feelings and torment that I was going through when I was 16 in the scene. Do you know what I mean? Like, that emotion is the same, you know? Instead of Reagan, it's Trump. You know, so like that question of authority thought process is always going to be there. And when you're coming of age in the scene, there's no way around it.
I think what was different for us is that when we went to a show in New York, and I'm sure most major cities had, there was always a guy selling the pins. You remember the pin guy that would be with the long hair, that I forget his name, the pin
Clayton.
Guy. And then
Patterson.
They were, of course, you know who he is. And they were the underground zines, and there were a lot of them. And See Here, and there were places to find underground literature in New York, L.A., San Francisco. I think that while we lacked the internet, we had to search out the information more, and it made us more receptive to learning about things in a more organic way. Now, if I want to look up something, I just look up and I have it in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And that to me sucks. I wouldn't want to be a kid.
I wouldn't know how to be a kid now, but you can't do that, right? You can't go back in time. Like, you can't say like, oh, if I was 16 now, knowing what I knew, you know, like it doesn't work, right? We lived through the time we lived through, 80s, you know, 90s, or whatever. 16-year-olds today are living through today with smartphones and internet and, you know, refrigerators that can order groceries for them. That's not to say they're better off or worse off than I am or you are. It's just different. And it's unfortunately not something I can get my head around. Some people can, you know, I have peers my age that are like, oh no, this is awesome. And they get it and they understand it. I personally can't understand it, but that's just me.
I mean, I like going to the store. I've seen you at the store.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. I don't mind driving. I like driving. You know, it's fun. What are some of the plans that you've had for 2020, whether it be band, work, or just in general, that if you've had to put off, possibly postpone, or have been essentially canceled?
Well, as far as Let Rage is concerned, we had a bunch of shows that got postponed and canceled. We had shows lined up with Johnny Madcap and the Distractions. We had shows lined up with Take Warning, you know, the Op Ivy cover band that are amazing. I'm drawing a blank on who else. We had several shows lined up that, like, I was really excited about and that were going to be a ton of fun. And those all got postponed. We were supposed to, I was working on Let Rage going to New Jersey to play the Stoked for the Summer Bouncing Souls Festival. And that whole thing's been scrapped until next year, you know, and who knows what's going to happen now. It's fucking crazy to think that Let Rage may possibly become a casualty of this pandemic, you know, and it sucks. I don't want it to be. I don't want it to become a casualty, but we had some, like, I'm not, you know, we weren't fucking getting huge or anything, but we definitely had some momentum, right? Like, we had a bit of momentum. And when you lose that momentum, it's hard to get it back again. You know, so we'll see what happens when this is all fucking over, said and done, you know? I still want to play music, so, is that going to be in Let Rage? I fucking hope so.
Now, you've also moonlighted a little bit doing live concert crew work. And have you heard anything from the friends of yours that are more involved with that on a regular basis about what's going on? Like, what do they hear?
The people I know who tour for a living are worried, plain and simple, because there's nothing's going to happen until 2021 at the earliest. And that's still, you know, 6.5 months from now. How do you live for 6.5 months without any income? And it's funny because last September, I think it was September, I did like a 3-week run with Rancid. On that tour, Stormy Shepherd, their booking, Rancid's booking agent, said, hey, are you available in May? We're in May right now. She said, are you available in May? And I said, well, what are the dates exactly? Because, you know, I can take time off from work occasionally. And she said, all of it. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, I can take May off to go back on tour with you guys. That would be awesome. So I was supposed to be on tour right now with Rancid and the Dropkick Murphys doing another Berkeley to Boston thing. And that's, you know, who knows what's going to happen, if that's ever going to happen. So, but the people I know who tour at first were laughing at it, like, oh my God, this is crazy. Wow. But now they're like, well, fuck, this is actually really crazy. And I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, because when you tour for a living, your next tour is what you're working for, right? When you tour for a living, and you work as a roadie or a tour manager or a merch person or a lighting guy or a sound guy, you are constantly working yourself out of a job, right? Every job you start has an end date, a definitive end date. So it's really tough. I spoke with a friend of mine who works for the Foo Fighters just a few days ago. And he said that the Foo Fighters, now granted, the Foo Fighters are a larger band. They're able to do this. The Foo Fighters have taken care of their crew guys that like, okay, look, we know that we're not touring and we have nothing happening for the rest of this year at least. But so they've sort of given them a severance package, sort of been like, listen, we want to make sure you guys are okay. So, which is fantastic, but you know, not every band can do that. You know, people who work for Rancid or who work for, you know, Social Distortion or Sick of It All, you know, those people those bands can't afford to pay their guys to stay home and be like, oh, don't worry, we'll make sure this gets taken care of. So I don't know if you've seen the Bouncing Souls and Hot Water Music crew. They're doing a raffle to like raise money for their crew. Or just, I don't know, I spent like $100 or something on that. Just like, you know, whatever I can do to try and support my friends, that's what I'm trying to, I try to do the best I can, you know. Spend a little money here, a little money there, whatever. You know, it all helps, you know, so. But yeah, it's scary as far as live music. What's going to happen to live music when this pandemic is over? How will it work? I mean, yeah. Thank God, because I know that, maybe not today or right now, but I bet you the LA, the backyard shows are going to be going again real soon. And kids are going to be going to those and just being like, fuck this.
Well, I think it's going to definitely go underground initially.
Yeah, it has
because, you know, the way I've heard it two ways, and it's very possible that one of the reasons why they're trying to delay, you know, the LA government
right. Is
trying to delay everything is because they'll get more federal money the longer this goes on. Now, if that's true, that kind of makes sense because they're just throwing breadcrumbs out
right. Little
by little until the people get pissed and they're like, oh, we better do something, right? But if that's not true, well, then I don't know. But if it is true, that would really suck. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was true because, again, question authority.
Exactly.
And so I always will try to see the picture's red, but really, is it red? You know, like, I just don't know. I don't know what to believe. And I try to at least be well-read. I try to listen to different news sources.
Right.
And I don't read news that's based on Facebook.
Because sure.
That's all.
That's the only place I get my news from. Well, not Facebook. I'm not on Facebook, but Instagram.
right.
Instagram is the only place I get my news from. So depending on, you know, which of the far left or far right people I'm following, it's pretty, my Instagram stuff is usually pretty amusing to me anyway.
But there's got to be a meeting ground. So you figure, okay, the left says one thing, the right says one thing. So maybe if you combine a little of each, then you can come up with your own opinion.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens. I've never been a big political guy, ever. Right. Question authority is about where the limit of my politics ends. And it's funny because I try not to get into political discussions with anybody. I try not to be like, this is politically correct. This is, you know, I try not to get into that stance. But what I definitely do is I try to tell everyone I know to vote. Because if you don't vote, you can't bitch about whatever is happening, whether you feel strongly about it or not. I don't care. You know, when my daughter was younger, when Trump first got elected, my daughter was 16, 17.
Is the older one or the
older one? So she was 16 and she said, I'm going to move to Canada. That was her first thought. That was the first thing she said. And I said, no. I said, because in 4 years, when he's running for president again, you can vote and get him out. I was like, you can't leave to Canada. You have to vote and try and change things that way. You know, besides, Canada's going to get sick of us.
They're going to be saying, no, please.
Yeah, Canada's going to build a wall.
They're going to say, no, we don't want any more of you. Please go back. Elect someone else that you don't have to leave.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, you know, politics, not my thing, but you got to vote. You have to vote.
You know that a lot of bands are trying their best to whatever, right, to keep money coming in. But you live in the valley. We both live in the valley, but it must be, I don't know. I don't find it frustrating. I don't know if you go into a lot of restaurants. I go to a lot of restaurants and the mood is very like somber.
Right.
Like people are, they're just beaten down by something that they can't really put a finger on, but it's just something where they're kind of going through the motions. Like they don't really know what else to do. And it's really kind of sad.
It's crazy to think of some of the places that you love are gone and are not coming back. Some of the places that, you know, it's like when I say you, I mean us as people in general, you know what I mean? It's like True Tattoo is probably no longer going to be on Cahuenga in Hollywood. Having issues with the landlord and now this and boom, like, so that's gone. Amoeba. How long has Amoeba been there on Sunset? You know, it's been there forever. They're moving. They've already said, like, we're not opening back up here. And it's like, granted, I'm actually happy with that because I think Amoeba, where it's at, is a little overkill. But so many places. How many music venues are not going to come back from this?
The Hi-Hat already said they're probably not going to come back.
Okay, so there, you know, there's one, and that's a great spot.
That is like one of my favorite spots.
It's such an awesome spot.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's just nuts to think of all of the places, all the little taco places you love, all, you know, so many food places, just every movie theaters. What the fuck is going to happen with a movie theater?
I still want to go. I like seeing movies. I hate watching movies on television. Yeah.
As do I.
It's not the point. I think also we came from a generation where we like to leave the house. And I think now people are very content on staying in the house. And it drives me bananas.
Yeah, no, that's very true. This country is dumbing its people down so much with the technology. You can fucking send all your hate mail to Tim Chunks. That's fine. But this country and the smartphones and the smart TVs and everything, it's just dumbing us down so that, you know, and hey, look, oh, magically there's a pandemic to keep you inside and make you fucking dumber. Okay. I'm getting political now, but, but it's, you know, that's the 16-year-old in me, but it's crazy. Like you said, being in my 50s, growing up, I was always out. I had to leave. I didn't want to be there. It was like, I had to get out. I couldn't stay home and get the stimulation I needed. I had to be out and I had to be moving.
And I think that's great. I think that because of where you were living, I was in a smaller town, but you know, as long as I was home before dark, that was like all my parents didn't care about much. You know, they're like, just go out and, you know, come back before dark. Don't burn down the woods. You know, don't burn down the forest. You know, that's really kind of all they really said. It was just, I kind of enjoyed,
I wish my parents told me that.
Oh, you burned down a few forests?
Baseball field.
Oh.
Me and a friend of mine lit a baseball field on fire once. Home plate, you know, the fence that surrounds like home plate and runs down to like first and third base. Yeah. Basically, it's like on like public fields, you know, that fence runs around the baseline essentially. It was in the fall, and me and my friend were hanging out, and my older brothers and older sisters and their friends were actually playing some softball at the park. And me and my friend thought it'd be cool if we lit these dried leaves on fire. And those dried leaves spread along that fence so fucking fast. Luckily, my brothers couldn't catch me. So I was able to escape.
This is when you were 30?
No, I was probably, let's see, I was 13, maybe?
Oh, all right. Okay. So 13? Just teenage shenanigans.
Teenage shenanigans, yeah. This same friend of mine and I had heard that there was this, it was sort of like an abandoned field. It was, you know, near his house. We had heard that they were going to put a skate park in. So we thought we'd help them by trying to burn it out. And like every other week, we'd have fire engines there because we would just light these massive fucking fires at the place. We would just go, we would get cans of kerosene and pour them on the weeds and just light the place on fire. It never became a skate park.
Well, what is it now, or you don't know?
I haven't been over there. I think it's still just some weird abandoned field. I think maybe some Con Edison uses it for some storage or something now, I think. I'm not even sure.
Damn, you came so close.
So close.
What do you miss about life before March?
Shows, plain and simple. Shows. Shows and socializing. I was trying to explain to somebody the other day that I'm a social person, right? It's like I hate people, but I need to be around them. It's a weird dynamic. I was trying to explain to somebody that even if I go to work and I'm working with 20 guys I can't stand, that'll still feed and suppress that social need. It'll take care of it. But now I'm just home. Alone most of the time, and it's driving me fucking crazy. I am missing a live show more than anything.
Do you remember the last show you went to?
Yes, I do. It was my show. It was Let Rage with Punk Rock Karaoke at the Bowling Alley.
And for a lot of people that we know here in LA, that was the last show that people went to. And had we known it was going to be the last show, perhaps it would have been a little bit crazier.
I imagine it would have been.
But I still think it was great because we're luckily we are able to be friends with Greg Hetson.
Exactly.
And I think that to be with a band who is friends of ours, I think is great.
Yeah. It wasn't like our last show was seeing Third Eye Blind.
Right, right.
Where we don't know any of them. And we're complete, you know, outcasts. It was like our last show was with a bunch of people that are our friends. Not just our peers, but our friends. So, you know, it could have been worse.
It's just really nice to have had that last show be with people that are friends or friendly to the league. And it's just unfortunate that I've had to cancel so many shows.
Right.
I would get notifications of shows that were canceled that, oh, you're getting refunded. Ugh. This show's canceled. This show's canceled. I'm like, oh, fuck. I was supposed to see, which band was it? Oh, Negative Land. They never, and they're just a weird, I know, do you right. know who they are?
No clue.
They did that U2, they're almost killed SST. They did that really weird, I still haven't found what I'm looking for, cover, I guess you could call it a cover, that was released and Casey Kasem was on it screaming and that almost killed SST. It brought a lawsuit, that's for sure.
The last show, and speaking of Darren, he hit me up and wanted to know if I wanted to do one of those isolated punk rock karaoke songs where, you know, they, I guess Monkey did one and, you know, they've had several people do them.
Susie Moon
did one,
Scott,
yes.
Scott Radinsky?
Yes. So Darren had hit me up, and I was supposed to get back to him, but I don't know what song I'm going to do. What song should I do?
Do Stranglehold.
Do they do Stranglehold, though?
I don't know. You could make them learn it.
I don't think they do Stranglehold.
You could make them learn it. Well, let's just say life gets back to normal somewhat once this is over, whenever it's determined that it's over. Aside from shows, what do you look forward to the most?
Free travel, like being able to, you know, being able to just move about freely and not be like publicly shamed or whatever, you know, for going on a hike or, you know, going to the grocery. I really look forward to going to the grocery store without wearing a fucking mask. That's what I look forward to.
Do you ever just check the toilet paper aisle just for fun to see if there's any there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, I do. Every time I go, I love looking down the paper goods aisle just to laugh, just to have a chuckle, be like, wow, really? It's fucking insane how people react, you know? It's just fucking nuts.
Have you learned anything about yourself during this lockdown that maybe you're surprised about?
I wouldn't say I learned it about myself, but it's become more apparent that I'm a goddamn pack rat.
Well, it happens, you know, we acquire stuff, you know.
When you've been around as long as I have, you acquire stuff,
you know. Yeah,
really the only thing I could say that I've learned, which I already stated, was that I'm a social being. I need to be around people, you know. I hate the loneliness of self-isolation. It sucks.
If you could give an inspirational thought or something that inspires you maybe on a day-to-day basis, week-to-week, but something that you maybe look to for inspiration to share with us as we close this out, do you have anything like that?
Wow, way to get deep.
I'm just trying to be leave someone something.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. Sure. This pandemic sucks, right? Nobody's going to argue that point. Nobody's going to argue that this pandemic. Shouldn't say nobody, because I bet there's some fucking rich fucker somewhere who's like, I'm making tons of money on this.
His name is Jeff Bezos.
Maybe so. But for the most part, this pandemic really sucks. However, it is going to change, right? It is going to pass. Now, granted, when we come out of this pandemic, things might not be the same way they were. Shows might not be the same. You know, things are going to be different, but it is going to change, right? So we're not going to be stuck in this forever. So you got to kind of sort of look for that eye on the prize, if you will, right? Like, yeah, okay, today. Oh, what'd you do today? I did the same fucking thing I did yesterday and the day before that and the day before that and the day before that. But a day is going to come where it's like going to be like, what did you do today? I went fucking fishing naked in the mountains. It was awesome. That day is going to come. It is going to come. So you got to kind of keep your eye on that. Don't let this shit get you down. If this shit really starts bugging you, hit me up. We can talk all day if you want. Like I said, I'm a social person. I'm willing to fucking drive pretty much anywhere in Los Angeles and outside of Los Angeles if you want to fucking hang out and skate or get a fucking sugar-free Red Bull or something. Hit me up on the fucking Instagram at TheTimmyChunks or at Let Rage Official. So. Yeah, I don't really know if I have any words of wisdom for anybody, except stay safe, stay strong. Quarantine!